Hello and welcome to ECFR's Russia podcast, Under the Overcoat. That's a reference to Nikolai Gogol's famous short story, Under the Overcoat. And Dostoevsky has said that all of Russia's literature comes from Gogol's Under the Overcoat story. We have chosen that as a title for our podcast on matters that concern Russia. We have done a number of rows, and in this week, before Russia's presidential election, we are joined by Alexei Levinson from Moscow, no less. Alexei is sociologist with the Levada Center. And another guest is my colleague, Xenia Luchenko, ECFR visiting fellow, who has been outside Russia for a while. We are not going to discuss elections in any specific terms, but still, we think that the pre-election week is a good time to ask, how do Russian people feel about themselves, their country, their life, where the country is going? So let me actually start with a fairly broad question to you, Alexei. What is Russian society like in these days, 2 years after the start of the war? And what are the trends you are observing, or what are the events you are paying attention to? What matters to you, viewed from Russia, might be different from the things that we in the West manage to pick up and pay attention to.
Judging from the data we collect from our opinion polls, which we conduct every month during this period of so-called special military operation, and on the basis of these results, one may come to a conclusion that Russian society is in a very strange state of is immobilized somehow, because the proportion of those who report about their support of this military operation and the ones who report about their approval of the performance of President Vladimir Putin and some other parameters, they stand still since the very beginning of the operation in February 2022, which is strange and amazing. And we tried to explain this standstill by the fact that Russian society was kind of shocked, but this is a strange positive shock. Well, they are kind of frozen in their expectations of some very important events to happen, something like annexation of Crimea, which was considered to be as one of the most important events of the recent time. They compared it to the victory in the World War II. So I think there were some kind of expectations of this kind, both among the elite or part of the elite, who, as we know, expected the triumphant victory over Ukrainians within days or weeks, and probably the population of the country was in the same mood. When it became clear that this is not the case, the mood of these expectations kind of were frozen or were stultified, I repeat it, and only they made their appearance last summer, say in July 2023, when we all of a sudden found that about half of our respondents, just the ones who declared their support of the military operation, they said they would rather support the shift to the peaceful talks. And later on, in late autumn, the same amount of people who supported the military operation, that is 70%, they said that they would support if President Putin declares that he stops this operation within a week. One must have in mind that they were ready to support it on, so to say, Russian conditions. That is, if Russia retains the occupied territories that were included into Russian Federation already, Zaporozhye, Kherson, and Donetsk and Lugansk provinces, if the same goes together with the decision of President Putin to give these territories back to Ukraine, the number of the supporters reduced to 34% instead of 70. So, and also a great number of Russians said that if, imagine, if you could, we asked them, if you could 2 years ago, if you could stop or prevent the military operation, or you could let it start, what would you do? And the number of those who said we would rather not let it start was more than the ones who said we would support it. So there is a kind of a revision of the whole picture, and I have a kind of explanation why it happened so, but what I reported to you about were just the facts that we are sure they are the results of our opinion polls, I repeat.
Ksenia, do you want to add?
Well, I have a lot of questions, frankly speaking, because I left Russia 2 years ago, and I just read your researches, your results, to speak to my friends and acquaintances that stay still in Russia to understand what is really happening in Russian society. So, but I'm an impression that it's turning into a sort of a black box, because even journalistic sources don't speak to the journalist. And there are not a lot of people who wants to speak and who is still reflecting on something, because it's maybe dangerous even to think not to speak out. How do you understand what people really think? For example, if we speak about the ideology and propaganda, how much all this ideological statement that are now promoted on the high level are really sharing by Russian people? How much is all this ideology of traditional values, of conservative turn, and so on, of these historical narratives? Is it really the ideology of Russians? Or it's more similar to the late Soviet Union, when ideological stereotypes and stamps were treated with cynicism, or they were just ignored by the majority of people?
Well, the short answer would be yes, it would rather like resembling the situation in the USSR, when there was a state propaganda and official ideology, which was not penetrating deep into, so to say, souls of the people. And everyday life was not governed by the principles that were declared by this propaganda. The same is the case now, I guess. As to these values, well, if you ask people, do you respect these values, they will definitely tell you yes. But this doesn't mean that they do it in their everyday practice. I think that what, well, I dare to speak, excuse me, as a sociologist at the moment, I dare say that the real values that govern, predict, and rule public behavior, they are the same that were for years and years. By the way, they did not change much after the collapse of the Soviet Union. The new thinking of perestroika and the more traditional atmosphere of Putin's years, they still did not penetrate deep into what are real values of everyday life and behavior, how people relate to each other, how people rear their children or make romances and do other important things in their lives, how they meet the birth of children and to the death of the old people. All this goes as it was. No communist tint on that, neither democratic tint nor traditionalistic or conservative of today. This is my very firm conviction. So all these things you are asking me about, to my mind, are quite superficial. Certainly, you can find now quite a number of people who will tell you that they are happy to see that Russian traditional values, at last, they come back to our life and so on and so on. But maybe some of them are teachers or people who are obliged to declare it, who have to demonstrate their convictions and that they are true to the current ideology, official ideology. But if you talk just to people, they will agree. If you ask, is it good that Russia follows the traditional ways of life? They will say yes, certainly it's good. Are they doing it themselves? No.
But why propaganda then uses all these ideological narratives if they don't work?
Well, because, propaganda, I think, propaganda has the primary function of that, or the main function of that, is to keep people obedient to the authorities. And now this is done by presenting to them some set of slogans or principles. And now that principles are declared, now your business is to check whether people do express their agreement with that. But the story is the same, let's say, in Mao Zedong China or Stalin's Russia or current Putin's Russia, Stalin's Soviet Union. This is how the same, say, in Italy of the 30s, and some other examples are very well known as well.
But has that discussion about traditional values affected how Russians understand Europe. I mean, I can see in President Putin's speeches, he consistently portrays Europe as a decadent place where all Christian values have got lost, where, you know, traditional gender roles or even genders themselves no longer exist, and Europe wants to convert the whole world to that kind of practice. That is, strictly speaking, not true. We can confirm from Europe. Do the Russians believe the message? Does that actually achieve its aim of alienating them from the West?
Yes, they do. They do believe it, provided they got rid of two visions of Europe. First, the traditional one that was standard for any educated Russian, that Europe is the motherland of our culture and the source of high values and high standards and so on. This is, at the moment, this perception of Europe is kind of subdued or oppressed and maybe we can say repressed, and it is only in minds of the minority of Russians, this I know for sure, or this is put somewhere in the storage in the minds of ordinary people. They kind of forgot about that all. Instead, they have taken the new picture of Europe, which is there is no demand for this picture to be realistic in any sense. It is I cannot say mythological in true meaning of the word, but mythological in quotation marks. And this is just the vision of Europe, which has one and only one dimension. Europe is immersed into homosexuality. And what is even worse, that Europeans, they want to inflict this on us. It sounds stupid, and it's really strange when I meet people saying these things at my table when I conduct focus groups with them, and when they declare it, and if you ask them, do you really believe it? They become very angry because they don't believe it, but they pretend as if. They don't want to be, so to say, caught on this trick of their mind. And what is interesting, the realistic picture of Europe in the minds of those who visited Europe several times, maybe 5 years ago or 7 years ago, and who have some realistic memories about European countries, this one is also somehow washed off their minds. They tell stories about Europe as if it came from fairy tales or from not from their personal experience, but from some texts. I think this is also the part of that strange transformation of public mind, which I mentioned in the beginning, when the special military operation started.
You mentioned.
So they don't want to talk about real things. They prefer to talk about some very simple, very rude, I would say, slogans or not slogans, but primitive formulas instead. This is what is typical for a good part of Russian public of today.
You mentioned something that is highly interesting to me, that people do not actually believe the things they are saying, and admitting or you asking about it makes them very angry. To me, it associates with something that I think I see when I follow some expert conversations or elite conversations that obviously are happening in censored space, because, you know, there are things that you cannot mention because it's criminalized. And I notice how people being forced to operate in such frames, they seem to cause cynicism. I can see how people I have known for a long time are getting very cynical about everything and everyone on in the West as well as in Russia. And that seems to be kind of coping strategy on a personal level. Do you observe something like that on wider scale in society?
Yeah, well, in much more primitive form, yeah, maybe. But let me add one very important element of this picture. There is, I don't think they, my respondents truly believe in what they say about Europe. This is not a matter of belief. This is a matter of some kind of consensus or, I don't know, make believe. But what they truly believe in is the United States being a big or great or gigantic enemy of Russia, the enemy of not of ordinary kind, like adversary or in the battlefield, but this is a kind of eternal animosity, eternal struggle between Russia and the West and the United States or NATO. Sometimes these are all synonyms. And the fact that we are involved into such a contest or such an opposition, America and Russia, which is the core of the current history, or maybe of the history of the humanity. And all that happens in the world is manifestations of this rivalry, be it in Ukraine or in Middle East or in Africa or whenever. And this is the battle that goes for, some people would say, for ages. And they don't care that the United States is quite a young state. But then the West is as old as Russia. And now maybe West was represented by England, or Great Britain. Now it is represented by United States and Great Britain somewhere there. And this is maybe one of the explanations of the strange attitude of Russians towards the Russian-Ukrainian conflict. There are no strong anti-Ukrainian sentiments in Russian society, I swear. There are some, but they are not up to the level one could expect, having Ukraine as your rival on the battlefield. No, because there is, I would say, a solution for Russian mind, for Russian collective mind. We are not fighting with Ukrainians. We are fighting with this evil whose name is the West. And this military operation or this warfare or this war is just an episode of this eternal conflict. Because of that, the importance of that is not that, you know, you can treat it in both ways. The importance is great, much greater than the conflict with the Ukraine. Or the importance is not that much because we had it, lots of them in the past and we will have lots of them in future. So this is something ordinary. The other consequence of that is that there can be no victory in the same meaning, in the same sense as victory, say, in 1945, when your rival is destroyed. No hope that United States will be destroyed by this war with Russia. And on the side of Russia, the victory, you can find victory any moment, any day, whenever you find that you are not defeated. To be not defeated by such a strong rival means to be victorious. So you can stop the warfare with Ukraine, saying, okay, enough is enough. We demonstrated to everybody that they failed to defeat us. It's enough. For us, it's enough. The territories have some kind of, I think you understand that Russians do not need these lands for some expansion of or for any practical reasons. But this is a kind of a trophy, the proof that we are on the winning side. So we cannot let them back.
This is really interesting. And actually, that is something that is picked up, I think, in the non-Western world or the so-called Global South. We discussed it just the other day at another ACFR seminar. And Ivan Krastev pointed out that even when Russia was doing really badly in the autumn of 2022, had to withdraw from Kharkiv, later Kherson, in those countries, that was not seen as loss because resisting America is a big thing. Losing some territory in the process is understandable. And I think what matters here, I mean, these countries do not get it from Russian propaganda, but that is actually where it clicks with their own worldview. They draw the same conclusion looking at it. Because, you know, that is not the kind of narrative that Putin is even pressing, even though he's trying to mobilize the non-Western world to fight Western hegemony. But that concrete line that, he doesn't present it that way. Ksenia, you have questions or observations?
Yeah, I'm thinking about the picture that you have given to us, a picture of increasing isolation, especially within the young generations of Russians. And I thought that really in previous years, not because, of course, Russians were not traveling a lot, but there were a middle class in the big cities the possibility to travel and to experience a European life, an American life, this was a value for this middle class. And now we have a new generation of young people who are now in their early 20s, who have no possibility to travel at all. They don't have this experience because there was a pandemic and then the war began. And they haven't seen any European town. They haven't this experience of even flying on the planes. And that's just completely other picture of the world that they have in their heads. And because of the censorship from the one hand and the sanctions from the other hand, they even can't be part of this global culture. If they want to see new American films or European cinema, they need to turn on VPN, find some illegal copies, and so on. There are not a lot of people who want to do all these illegal, criminalized things. And what is the? Is this young population more vulnerable to propaganda? Or they have this picture of imaginary Europe and imaginary world in their heads that can be compared once again to the late Soviet Union times when we had all these pictures of European countries that we saw in beautiful films or we read in classical literature. And then it turns out to be a little bit other thing. What will be with this new generation? What do they feel? Do they protest against this isolation? Do they feel the lack of these cultural things or not?
Well, there is something, I would say, something strange with Russian youth, not of this generation you are talking about, but since we noticed that in even in late Yeltsin's times, when we just started our public opinion research, we noted that different from other countries, by the way, from the Ukraine, which was very close culturally to Russia, the position of the youngest among our respondents, the ones who were of 18 to 24 years old, was different. They were politically very passive. They were not the ones who were the vanguard of people rushing, so to say, towards the better future. We noted at that time that the main part of the ones who were present on the manifestations shouting Yeltsin, Yeltsin, were people of in their 40s, not the youngest. And certainly there was a proportion of very young boys and girls sometimes everywhere where some political events happened. But they were never the main part of that, with one exclusion. Let me just mark it at the moment. When Alexei Navalny made his appeal to the public, this was the first and the only case when young people appeared on the streets, young and very young people. He was the only politician who managed to make an appeal to that part of our society. All the rest failed. As to the young people of the of today, who, as you truly mentioned, were stripped of the chances to see Europe, to see the outer world, well, you know, they are very few in their number. It is the specific feature of the demographic situation at the moment. They are the smallest part of Russian age pyramid. And their voice is not that vocal in the society. I think they are very different from the previous generations, mostly because they are they were born with their mobile phone in their hand. Makes them very different in the construction of their thinking process. This is not my observation, but observation of the the ones who are professional in that. And it makes them so different from others that the problem of Europe being absent from their mind maybe is not that that important as it could be, say, for us. The whole world is present in their minds, but in this strange form of the internet games and visuals and all this stuff that is available for them. So for me, it's very dangerous to see something, to say something definite about this generation. They are different. How different they are or they will be in their political attitudes, we will see in the very near future.
You mentioned Alexei Navalny. Well, his funeral also attracted many people, I think, of different age groups, not only young, but also young. And it turned into an event. I do not dare to say a political event, but I think it was a meaningful event for those people who went there, and actually also, I think, for many who didn't make it to the cemetery, but followed it from far away. And that is actually not sort of the only example, recent example of civic activism being expressed when people get a chance to do it sort of more or less safely, more or less legitimate way, not explicitly breaking the law. So what does that tell to you? There seem to be some enthusiasm behind such actions, like, you know, signing up for Boris Nadezhdin or going to Navalny's funeral or even some other apolitical actions that people engage with. I'm not sure, you know, that speaks about the bulk of a society, probably not. I guess it's minority that feels the need to express their feelings or views in those kinds of ways. But still, it's a curious phenomenon.
It is. It is. And if I come back to the picture I presented to you in the beginning of our discussion about this society staying still, this is very, on this background, it looks much more picturesque, much more interesting. We did not see mass manifestations for a long time. They were severely oppressed and washed off the public scene, at least in Moscow and other big cities. So it is a new phenomenon, and I think one can expect some other happenings of this kind, to some other events of this kind to happen in near future. I told you the story about the small kitten and people becoming very enthusiastic about that. To me, these are all the signs of very high tension within society that may outburst in God knows what forms. It is really important that participation in these funerals was not 100% safe for the people who were there, but they by their behavior they said, "We don't care." This is truly important. it's different. The mass manifestations of previous years in comparison with this one were really safe. Nothing, well, if you just go with other people and don't make any special gestures or what, then nothing happens to you. Later on, it became very dangerous. You can be beaten, and you can be taken into special police trucks and so on. But I say about the mass gatherings, they were safe. Now they are not, and still they are here. So we have to consider it very seriously. But I cannot say more about that. I cannot predict, and I don't think anybody can predict how this will go go on in future.
Ksenia.
Well, the future. I think maybe we should discuss now the future, because I was trying to discuss the young generations and their attitudes towards Europe and towards their maybe feeling that they are cut off from the big culture. And now you mentioned the word future. So I've read in Nova Gazeta recently your piece about a survey on what Russians think about the future, about their future. And it seems that there is no future at all. And what is this society in which the majority sees no future? Is that the society guided by anxiety, by uncertainty, or they don't even think about future and don't feel that that there is no a picture of a future they desire, or maybe they are afraid of? Is there maybe any hope? Do Russians feel that hope could be a value? Because after Navalny's death, in Russian independent media, there was a big discussion about the notion of hope, because somebody wrote that there is no more any hope and we should stop about even using this word. The other said that no, we have hope because Navalny said that we must not be afraid and we should do what we can. And there is, of course, a hope on the future. But does maybe these surveys of future have any connections with values, with not traditional values, but good values about that can unite the society, such as hope, for example?
I have, if I may add, same question has actually been intriguing me as well recently. I mean, I remembering still the Soviet era where there existed an official notion of future, communism. And even if, you know, not many people believed in it, I think in Brezhnev Soviet Union, that was somehow still important because that established a system of coordinates of some kind, established some rules and taboos, and actually even introduced some accountability into the system, because, you know, the higher ups, they needed to keep the notion of communism legitimate in the eyes of the people, and that imposed some constraints on their behavior today. You must not discredit communism with your petty corruption today, sort of making it sound more simple than it was. And now I'm interested in the same thing. I don't feel that there is a notion of future in today's Russia. And that, on the one hand, probably allows the political system to do the kinds of things it wouldn't be able otherwise. And I also assume it has effect on people, or how I think, I mean, my theory is that it might give a rise also to much hidden anxiety that then bursts out in ways that might not always even be rational.
Xenia and Kadri, you have touched the issue that is, in my mind, is one of the most interesting and important ones, and I wouldn't say that I have a good answer to your questions and to my own questions to that. What I definitely know that Russians got used to go without any idea of the future in their public discourse. If it is about their private lives, private discourse, everything is all right. They have some plans for future, for very distant future. For instance, they take hypotheque, you call it, yeah? For 20 years, they start building their country houses or whatever, and they rearing the little kids, they think about their higher education programs in 15 years from now, and so on. As to the future of the society or of the country, for already several years on and on my focus groups, people have no answer about the positive future of their country. They have negative answers. They have answers about the negative version of the future. The answers are, there are three of them that one can be converted into another: world war, civil war, and disruption of the country. The disruption may be the result of the civil war or of the world war, and vice versa. Nothing else. And the disruption of the country, this is the end of the history, the end of everything. They cannot think about anything happening after that. There is no time after that. When Vladimir Putin says, "Who cares about the world if there is no Russia in it?" he is reproducing this kind of thinking. After Russia is collapses, everything stops. Nothing happens. Nothing can happen after that. This is the only idea of the future. Because if we ask about the future in the positive modality, the answers are funny or stupid. Mostly they say, well, it will be just like now, or everything goes just like now. And in some cases, they, if we ask them, and who is ruling the country, they say Putin. Well, in 20 years from now, Putin or somebody like him. No idea about any change. This is another reflection of that strange state of public mind that I reported about in the beginning. You know, this part of the public mind is kind of frozen, and it reflects the position of the upper classes and of just as you justly said about the Soviet authorities who were kind of responsible for the future towards their people. In this case, the authorities demonstrate no plans, no projects for the future. So the society its turn have nothing to say about that. No fantasies, no utopias. This is very important, I think.
Thank you, Alexei. On that note, we need to wrap up. Just one thing left to be done, and that is our traditional bookshelf section. We always ask our guests, what are they reading and what book in any language, but preferably about Russia, you would recommend to our listeners. So, Alexei.
Let me answer like that. In Russia, unfortunately, we do not have philosophers and philosophy as a profession. People of art are on their place. They perform part of the function that philosophers are entitled to. And as it was in the late 70s and 80s, the preparatory work for the future transformations was done in the realm of arts, theater, poetry. So read Russian poets of today. They are numerous. Some of them are brilliant. Visit some of Russian theaters performing in very strange places sometimes. Sometimes being under very close surveillance of the police and so on. But they try to find some way in the dark, some light in the dark. And I think at the moment this is the most. My hope is on them. Let me put it like that.
Thank you, Ksenia.
Yes.
What is your recommendation?
I have a lot of recommendations because. There are some new independent publishing houses and literary agencies that now edit books written by Russian authors, but cannot be published in Russia because of censorship. And they are published in English. For example, a book by Yelena Kostyuchenko, a famous Russian journalist, it is named "I Love Russia: Reporting from a Lost Country." It's about her journalistic work, but with some personal attitudes and reflections. And I think this book will help to understand what real Russia is and how Russians who love their country feel now about all these hostilities and so on. Then there is a book by Katerina Gordeeva, Take My Grief Away. It's also about the war, the stories of people affected by this war, both Ukrainians and Russians, and about the fragility of human being and so on. And there are some, in Russia, there are now a lot of authors who are feminists. And there are some books by Daria Serenko, for example, or Evgenia Nekrasova, or Oksana Vasyakina. They are all translated in foreign languages. And these are essays, poetry, and novels about how women feel in contemporary Russia, about women's fates, hopes, and it's not an easy reading because there is nothing optimistic, but I think it's worth to be read. It's worth to be read.
And I would recommend that you read anything by Levada Center. Not just poll results, but people will probably follow anyway, or at least accept this information. But that's really the tip of the iceberg and not the most interesting thing for me. But what I've been deeply impressed with and learned a lot is how scholars of Levada Center, Alexei, but not only, I have talked with your current and former colleagues, including Yuri Levada himself, how you make sense of what you see in polls and focus groups, how you penetrate and identify some hidden but real currents in the society. Lots of eye-opening findings to me. I'm not sure what of that is available in English or how accessible what has been published in Russian would be. Some of that is on the website, not all, I think. But yeah, I would encourage anyone who is interested in Russia and Russian society, relationships between politics and society, to pay a look, to dig into also old writings and just go through it and just read. Also, Yuri Levada himself, I still remember how he identified what Russia needs to do to overcome Soviet legacy, to become a different country, to build institutions that actually work for people, deliver for them, to stop running the country as if on a permanent state of emergency in a mobilizational mode, and to learn to live with neighbors without perpetually threatening to them. And yeah, if Russia briefly seemed to have ticked some of these boxes, then right now I think they are all completely unticked again. Let's hope it will not stay like that. And Alexei, thank you very much for joining our podcast.
Thank you. And I invite everybody to visit our website. We have an English version of that, so you can follow the events in my country, whatever they are. Thank you very much for you, Ksenia, and for you, Kadri.
Thank you, and thanks you to our listeners. We will be back with still more podcasts before long.